Okay, folks, welcome again to Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for jumping into your rocket, getting up there in the stratosphere and landing on our landing pad right here in the cosmosphere. Delighted, of course, to tell you all, you all will have guessed that I am again today with the wonderful Leslie Ann Jones. And Leslie Ann, the story you told about Rachel Welsh in our last podcast, my God, that's caused a considerable amount of interest, but you must have known that it would.
I'm quite crushed by it in a way because
crushed?
What it tells me is, you know, even today,
yep,
men are only flawed by the big, busty blonde, and they're not really interested in the mousy little rest of us.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, no. I don't think that's all. Some men don't actually like shapely women. I had a mate once who I remember he was always on the pull. It was a typical Fleet Street situation. And, you know, a lot of the guys and girls we live with, certainly the guys, they'd have a big house in Wiltshire or Kent, you know, or, you know, somewhere else, I don't know, Sussex or something like that. Yeah. But they'd always have, like, a crash pad in town. In fact, there's one guy I work with. For years, his wife thought that he was living in a sort of bedsit that he'd organised, you know, somewhere around Fleet Street. We were all still... Well, he was Mirror Group, so it was that Colmore Circus, the Mirror Group?
Yeah,
it was.
Hoban Circus.
Hoban Circus, sorry. Yeah, you're absolutely right, yeah. And for years, his wife was quite happy, you know, believed that he lived in a bedsit. In fact, he lived full-time during the week with a barmaid from one of those clubs that we all used to go to till 2 a.m, you
well,
know.
Well, more for his wife for never going there.
Exactly.
For never visiting the place and checking it out and making sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I never think those long-distance marriages work anyway.
Well, I don't know about that. You know, some women told me they don't mind getting rid of the husband 4 or 5 days a week. I think the hardest relationship in any marriages when people live and work together. I don't know how that happens.
Well, that too.
I don't know. You've got to have space from each other, in my view.
Yeah, my husband, my ex-husband,
yes,
worked in Poland from Monday to Friday for weeks.
Oh, really?
Years, actually.
Really?
For several years.
Yes.
I was at home with a 12-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a newborn.
Wow. Yeah.
At the sort of peak of all this.
Yes.
And he would come home at weekends. We would spend a day and a half arguing about all the things that had been piling up during the week.
Yeah.
And then he would leave again.
Yeah.
And my little boy would call Sunday lunch Poland food because the minute he'd finished eating his Sunday lunch, he would pick up his bag, get in his car and go off to the airport.
Really?
And my little boy used to stand on the doorstep and pee himself. And because he couldn't express his distress that his father was leaving again.
Good God.
And this was his little protest.
It's terrible.
And I have very bad memories of that period of time.
Yeah.
I personally don't think that remote marriages can work.
Right, okay. What was he doing in Poland?
He was making two banks talk to each other.
Oh, I see.
So the Allied Irish Bank had acquired a Polish bank.
Right,
and the workforce and the computer system had to learn to speak to each other.
In our last podcast, you talked about people dipping themselves into ice and all that, you know? Believe it or not, Madonna is back on the road. And funnily enough, she must have been listening to our last podcast. She decided to keep jumping in and out of ice baths.
Oh, she's learned our lesson, hasn't she?
Yeah, she's over 60 now. Do you think she should still be back on the road?
Why not? Mick Jagger is.
Well, yeah, but Mick Jagger is the front man for a group. She's still a solo artist, and I wonder whether she can continue.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that the Rolling Stones are a phenomenon. I'm not saying Madonna is not a phenomenon, but she's not what I would call a world power emanating from the 60s like Mick Jagger is. She came a decade later.
What does that have to do with it? Why do you have to derive from the 60s?
Because they didn't just invent a lot of pop music and records. They changed the culture of this country single-handedly with the Beatles.
No.
Yes,
the
they did.
Beatles did. I don't believe that the
you
Stones
You don't think
did.
The Stones did?
No, not
don't
at
Don't you
all.
Think the Stones liberated youngsters and, you know, parents would say, don't go anywhere near the Rolling Stones. Don't you know they haven't had a wash for 3 weeks?
That's not really influencing the culture, is it?
Well, I think it is. It's making kids rebel against their parents. I mean, You're absolutely right about the Beatles. The Beatles changed the culture of the world, but I think it was the Stones who taught their children, who taught their fans, teenagers, to rebel against their parents. And do you know who's in charge of that? Brian Jones. Brian Jones was an amazing man. And for those who are not as well up on the Stones as I am, probably because you may not be my age, but they are a phenomenon. Brian Jones founded the Rolling Stones. Nobody knew that. But after about 3 or 4 years of their success, or even less, 2 or 3, he was so heavily into drugs that he couldn't even attend recording sessions. He was just too out of it to play a guitar, even though he'd invented it and he was a brilliant guitarist and all that. So the story is quite well known, but I'll repeat it briefly. Mick Jagger and Keith Richards get into a Bentley, drive down to Sussex to the house where A.A. Milne used to live.
Cotchford Farm. Cotchford Farm.
Is that what it's called?
Uh-huh.
And it's where A.A. Milne wrote his books and invented the
Winnie the Pooh.
And Pooh sticks, where you stood on one side of a bridge and they actually stood on the bridge where the water runs underneath and the sticks, which are bits of straw, are racing each other down the river. You're absolutely right. And they got on there. And Brian Jones was so out of it. I mean, he hardly recognised who he was talking to. But the following morning, he was found dead, floating face down in his swimming pool.
In the pool.
And it's alleged, is it not, that after Jagger and Richards left, a builder came round who had an unpaid bill to sort out with Brian Jones, and Brian Jones somehow died. The builder's dead now, by the way.
Well, yeah, but what the world doesn't know is that his underage Swedish girlfriend was hiding in the wardrobe upstairs in the bedroom.
Really?
And that one of the Rolling Stones, I'm not going to say which one, came round and smuggled her out, and they got her back to Sweden before the inquest.
Really?
Yeah. I often wonder where that girl is today.
I bet you it wasn't a Rolling Stone who did that. It'd be a Rolling Stone minder, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was a Rolling Stone. I know which one because he told me the story.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's an amazing story. That is amazing.
But, you know, you go along to a Stones concert
today,
as I did last year.
Yes.
You're hearing songs from 50, 60 years ago. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear anything new that they might have come up with.
Of course they don't.
So for me, it's not about the band. It's about the audience hanging on to their youth.
Yeah, well, I think you may be right.
The nostalgia trip is ours. It's not theirs.
I think they've all been hanging on a bit too long now. I've been to see the Stones once, and I thought the sound was so empty compared to recording studio brilliance. You know what I mean? Did you not think it was empty?
I was very disappointed.
They sounded like they were out of breath. Mick Jagger sounded like he was out of breath. The other guitarists, you know, didn't. I mean, Keith Richard pranced around all over the scaffolding and all that. But the others didn't. But it sounded to me like, hang on, I would prefer, you know, a choir behind you or another six-session guitarist just to up the sound. The
it's
sound
all
didn't
very
sound
half-hearted.
Anything like, you know, when you think of the quality of the Stones records, like, you know, Painted Black and This Could Be the Last Time and I Used to Love Her But It's All Over Now, the actual sheer quality from those days is brilliant. That's never replicated for me.
Well, doesn't that just show you how heavily they relied on studio techniques?
Indeed. Yeah.
And also, they look that nowadays as though they've been in a microwave.
Yes.
You know, they're melting away, crumbling to bits.
I agree.
You've got Charlie up on the drum riser, sort of just half-heartedly banging away.
Yeah, that's right.
And you think, yes, another 20 million in the bank tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I think they should give it up now. Also, when Mick Jagger had a heart palpitation about 18 months ago, I predicted that'd be the end for him. And I still don't think he should be prancing around. He had a valve replaced in his heart. I know quite a bit about hearts because I've been fighting to stay alive with a dodgy heart now for 15 years, as we said in the last podcast, you know. But I do think it's terminally dangerous to be prancing around like he does, because it's not just on the stage. He goes running 6 miles a day to keep fit and all that
kind of
stuff.
But dangerous why? I mean, look.
Dangerous because your heart could go, you know.
Yeah, but why would he care? Well, you know, look at the life he's had. And if
you
were...
No, he wants to live forever.
Jagger wants to live forever. If you were Mick Jagger, wouldn't you like to die on stage? Do a Tommy Cooper?
Maybe, but I mean, some people are just absolutely terrified of getting old, right? I've got a friend who is so terrified of getting old and of not being attractive to women anymore. And this guy, by the way, is a politician, not a rock star. He had ambitions to be a rock star, a politician. And he has regular facelifts. He gets that thing where they peel off the top of his layer of his skin and all that kind of stuff. He is regularly having all sorts of work done on his body to keep him fit, because he still likes trying to seduce young girls in their 20s. You know
what
I mean?
Can he still get it up?
I don't know. I haven't asked him.
So ask him.
But, well, no. And he is terrified.
No.
He told me this. He's terrified of, you know, his modus operandi is, you know, if he's down in London working, he'll do a job and then he'll arrange to stay overnight. And then if he's, you know, got an eye on one of the young production staff, female, right, he'll invite her around to his hotel the following morning after the show, you know what I mean, to say, oh, there was something, a project I wanted to discuss with you and all that kind of stuff, you know.
How sleazy.
Yeah, and he
sounds
said...
Sounds like Harvey Weinstein.
It does a bit. He said the moment that, you know, he could tell whether he was winning or not was when she came in the room, and then he took his dressing gown off, you know, and had like a pair of briefs on or something to see what reaction he got from the girl, you know.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah. And if he thought, he'd stand in front of the mirror for hours, and if he thought, you know, golly, you know, I'm not sure if I look any good and all that kind of stuff, then he wouldn't be happy until he got on, had some more surgery and got it done again.
But don't you think we're all afraid of growing old to a certain extent?
No, I'm not. No, no. I always looked forward to moving into middle age, you know, respectfully and gently, because that's where I thought I'd be most comfortable in my life. You know, I thought I'd have a great first third of my life, achieve anything. But it's gone the other way for me. First third of life was great achievement. Middle part of life, trying to hang on to it. And then the last third, desperately clinging on to make sure it didn't disappear.
So you consider yourself to be in the final third of your life, do you?
Do I consider myself the final third of my life? Yes, without a shadow of a doubt, of course.
And
I
it was a bit upside down for us, wasn't it, as well? Because we had all that excitement and the thrills and the getting on and off Concorde and chasing people around the globe and all that.
Sure.
In the days when our profession was intrepid and thrilling and exciting.
Oh, absolutely.
Pre-social media, where now everybody has a say.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. What do you think about politicians who now move into show business?
You are
the doyenness of the show business world. Have you ever had to deal with somebody who thought they'd cracked it in showbiz after being a politician? And I mean maybe something like Ed Balls.
Well, I haven't had any personal dealings, but I am pretty disgusted by people who do this.
Right.
You can't. It's a bit like trying to be a royal and a celebrity.
Yes, that's right.
You cannot be both.
No, I totally
agree. You're a politician, you're a statesman, you can't then go, over with that. Now I'm going to make some money as a celebrity.
That's right. I totally agree.
Doesn't work.
So, for instance, Ed Balls, okay?
Mm.
Now, Ed Balls is supposed to be a genius. You know, he went to either Oxford or Cambridge and got a great degree. He was first Secretary of the Treasury under Gordon Brown. And yet when the government that in which he was in charge of the finances finally collapsed, Gordon Brown's government...
Goes on strictly.
Well, I was about to say, that was the famous occasion when the guy at the Treasury left a note for the incoming coalition government saying there is no money left. They'd spent everything. It was the most hopelessly incompetent running the economy since the Second World War, basically, OK? And it was all down... Well, no, I'm not blaming it. Ed Balls was the first Secretary to the Treasury. He had a lot to do with it. Now, you're absolutely right. So if the coalition government hadn't got in my view, the country could have been bankrupt. We could have ended up like Greece. And that was down to what he was doing. You're absolutely right. Where does he next turn up? On Strictly playing the clown. Mm. Now, is that right?
Of course it's not. Dignity is everything.
Yeah.
Especially in political office.
Yes.
And I think they should fade quietly away.
Yeah, I do as well. I do.
Look at Theresa May. I mean, we hear nothing about Theresa May now, do we? Imagine the horror if she rocked up on some game show.
She has got the personality. But what made me even...
Neither is he.
No, that's right. It made me more angry at this. He then decided to pursue a career in showbiz. So he got onto Strictly and he was just like a guest. Then he's got an agent. Then he's looking for shows. He's pushing himself here and there. He's dancing on stage with his face painted up. I was absolutely disgusted and still am. He's married to a very ambitious female politician.
Yvette Cooper.
And I think she's just too embarrassed to get involved in what was when a couple of weeks ago the leadership election for
she's kind of anti-showbiz as well, isn't she?
I think she is a bit. The one who I've personally had dealings with, and again, this utterly surprised me, is Anne Widdecombe, right? So, you know, every time we do a podcast together, I drop in the fact that I work with somebody on Jeremy Vine, because that's the other thing I do. And it was Anne Widdecombe. And terrific brain. I mean, you could tell, you know. And she was a proper front bench cabinet minister politician.
And then she gets done up like the sugar plum fairy and gets on telly dancing.
Right.
What's that about?
Right, but this issue goes on further than the Ed Ball one. And I'll tell you why. So we're sitting there, and in one of the breaks, I said, Anne, I said, it's a strange old world, isn't it? When 10 years ago, you're asking people to vote for you because you wanted to be part of a Tory government. And most recently, you've asked people to vote for you because you want to stay on a, you know, a crappy celebrity show. And isn't it not rather undignified?
And she said...
She said, oh, no, I would never have done it while I was a serving politician. You see, you've got to understand that once your political career is behind you, then you are perfectly entitled to use the experience you've gained there to go on and do other things. Guess what? A year later, she was in the European Parliament.
Yeah.
So she did go back to politics. Yeah. And she said, of course, I would never go back to politics.
Disingenuous.
Now. But she went straight back to politics when she found an easy way back in with lots of money. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I've lost a bit of respect for Anne Widdecombe for not sticking to her principles.
Yeah, but it's exploiting the profile that they gain as a politician anyway.
Yes.
And that's inappropriate. As is, going on the after-dinner circuit and publishing memoirs.
Yes.
Why should David Cameron, who screwed the country,
screwed the country.
A lot of money about writing about his life?
Yeah, but they're so boring anyway.
The book bombed anyway. So.
Yeah, bombed, boring, totally agree, you know, pretty crap stuff. And
I did lose respect for him over that whole thing, and he should just fade quietly away. He's got enough dosh. Go live on an island somewhere.
Yeah.
Not interested.
Cameron was just a rich boy playing at politics, in my
As
view.
Is the Prime Minister.
No. I like Boris. I think, in my view, Boris Johnson didn't show the slightest interest in politics when he was, you know, Mayor of London, Foreign Secretary, until he got the top job. And now he's dynamic. And now he's introducing policies to tell everybody to shut up when, of course, he's the biggest self-publicist in the world. You don't go on television anymore. You don't talk and all that. And I think he's going to be quite dynamic.
Except that none of his children is talking to him. So, you know, it's...
None of his children are talking to him. His brother, of course, he fell out with.
He left his wife when she was having treatment for cancer.
You know. Yeah.
What, is he going to cleanse himself now by making an honest woman of Carrie?
Well,
let's see.
Do you know what? He's such a chancer, he might leave that until before the next election. Because, you know, romantics and all that kind of stuff.
No, the baby. Because weren't the Blairs the first in however many hundreds of years to have a baby while they were in number 10?
No, you're absolutely right.
They're going to do that.
Absolutely right. Okay, folks, you are listening once again to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm with Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, I have to always ask you about Showbiz Greats because, of course, you've worked with so many of them. People love your stories. From your last, the last podcast we did together, of course, you revealed that you lived with Raquel Welch. Millions of envious men now who are trying to contact me all the time, trying to see whether you've still got Raquel Welch's address in Hollywood. And I said, well, she probably won't be there these days. Now, listen, I'll tell you who's coming. Who's coming back into the fray to try and crack it again. One time we did a podcast, you told me that Egypt Station was a great LP made by Paul McCartney.
Fabulous.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Not a lot of people hear it these days, do they? Because it's download, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't mean to say that they're not buying it. McCartney, I mean, he walks on water, as far as I'm concerned.
I totally agree.
With him in Liverpool back in July.
Told me.
And
it really was. Yeah.
I had the opportunity to tell him about a conversation I had with his late wife, Linda, which I never imagined in a million years that I would get to say all of that to him. And he was hanging on my every word.
Really?
I never thought I'd get to say that.
Fantastic.
Either.
Amazing that his new wife, Nancy...
Chevelle was her former name. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Lady McCartney now, of course.
Yes, that's right, yeah. But she doesn't seem to object in any way that Paul or his people occasionally put out these pictures taken 30 years ago at the farm in Scotland, picture by Linda McCartney, always in our thoughts. She doesn't seem to have any resentment.
Why would you? How could you you feel threatened by a dead woman?
Well, exactly.
And also, Linda was the mother of his children.
Of course she was, yeah.
So you've got to honour that, haven't you?
Of course she was.
If you're a wise woman, you will always embrace the former wife in your life.
Oh, I agree. I think his children were pretty relieved when Nancy Chevelle came along after the horrendous experience they went through with Heather Mills.
And
you know
she's
what I mean?
Vanished off the face of the earth now, hasn't she?
Yeah, she got 25 million. Funny you should say that. I was only thinking the other day, crikey, I thought she would use that to big herself up all over the place. And she wanted to start a string of vegan cafes and all
she
this kind of
that,
stuff.
Cause there was
she did
press
one in
on
Brighton,
that.
But I think it closed down.
Then she put herself up for the Paralympic ski team.
Yes, that's right.
But she was banned at the last minute.
She was, that's right.
And I think that now there is some clause in her financial arrangements.
Like non-disclosure.
Yeah, preventing her from being out there.
But still, with 25 million quid, she'll get like interest of £1 million a year on that anyway. So
she's probably got some other bloke and she's
I would think so.
Set up a new life. Good luck to her, but go away, stay away.
Yeah, yeah,
we don't care.
But anyway, look, the reason we got onto pop stars was because I read the other day that it is the return of one of my favourite groups from the 80s, and that is Pet Shop Boys, okay? Now, did you do the Pet Shop Boys?
I knew Neil Tennant before he was a Pet Shop Boy.
Well, you see, this is a terrific, great story.
He was
story.
A journalist, wasn't he? He was on Smash Hits.
Oh, I see, yeah.
I was working at Chrysalis Records and he used to come in and interview the artists.
Right.
So we knew Neil for quite a few years before he decided to become a pop star himself.
I think we may have mentioned this before.
Yeah.
And then your relationship with him when became a pop star, did you get special access?
My friend David Ambrose actually signed the Pet Shop Boys to EMI.
Wow.
And so, yeah... it continued on, and I did get my share of exclusive interviews.
Well done. That's excellent. Good. And what do you think will happen with their new record? Do you think they're still musical?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
They're always fantastic songwriting talent.
Yeah.
They were ahead of their time.
Yes.
A lot of people have caught up now, but they are the original, and the original will always come out fighting.
Yeah, yeah. No, I sort of subscribe to that, but... You're right in what you said a few minutes ago about the Rolling Stones. I don't listen to any new music anymore. I know exactly that. I've discovered, by the way, I've got some new tellies fitted at home, right? And it was long
How many
overdue.
Tellies do you need? You live by yourself.
Three.
Three tellies?
Yeah, one in the bedroom, one in the lounge, one in the kitchen. And I've got a really old telly, which I've never bothered replacing, in my study, which, you know, you can switch on, you still get it. But when I'm in the study, I don't like to be distracted. But anyway, that's by the by. No, the point is, you know, see, the problem is when you live on your own, as I'm sure you understand, you've got to make time and space for people to come to your house. And I don't like people tramping around my house, you know, with wires and boxes and all that kind of stuff. But you
it's
have to
quite
get
intrusive,
it done.
Isn't it? I hate
it is very
all
intrusive,
that.
Yeah. And if they ask to use the bathroom... And then afterwards, I have to get my cleaning lady to come in to clean the bathroom and wash all the towels.
Do you make
and...
them take their shoes off at the door?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I always do that.
Oh, yeah,
except
the
washing machine man won't do it because he says he might get electrocuted.
Oh, rubbish.
So he has to keep his rubber boots on.
Well, all right, we'll tell him to bring those covers that the police use.
Galoshes.
You know? Yeah, galoshes.
Isn't
yeah.
Isn't that a great word, galoshes?
We used to use galoshes in New York because when we worked there in the winter, you know, the snow would come down, it would turn to slosh. And you could ruin a pair of shoes in 3 days, the amount of salt they put down. So we all used to have our galoshes to get from the office to Costello's, which is 4 blocks away. and you're walking around in 6 inches of slush. It was horrible.
Yeah.
And if you didn't put your galoshes on, your feet were wet for the rest of the
Wellington
evening.
Wellington boots do the job quite well, I find.
Well, yeah, but they're more cumbersome. You can carry galoshes around in a bag and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, point of my story. What was the point of my story? What were you talking
pop stars.
About? Pop stars. What pop stars? No, we're talking about the Pet Shop Boys. It went on from that. And then we talked about... Oh, yes, yeah, televisions, right? Yeah. So what happened was I ordered these two new tellies. And so what I've done is the telly that was in the lounge, which was, you know, reasonable size, has gone in the bedroom. Big new one in the lounge and a new smaller one in the kitchen.
Well, you've got cinema at home now then.
More or less, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. With a sound bar and all that
Did
kind
you
of
spend
stuff.
Your entire life watching stuff?
I do like to have them on all the time. So if I'm walking around the house, I don't miss anything. You know, if it's Prime Minister's question
John Lennon
time.
Was like that.
Was he?
He,
oh, was he?
He had televisions on in every room.
Really?
All the time.
Yeah.
And he'd be listening to music with the telly on in the background and reading a book.
Right. Amazing, yeah.
It tells you a lot about John, right?
Well, I'm sure it does. And you know a lot about John because, of course, you're writing a book about him, aren't you? The definitive book. How is that going,
getting
by the way?
Getting there. I'm on the home straight now.
Are you really?
This book has changed my personality. It's that is a very pretentious thing to say, isn't it?
Not really, because if you get that deeply into a subject, when's it coming out?
September the 17th.
Oh, really?
You've got worldwide, a date for it? Yes.
Right. Well, fantastic. And... you'll have signings around town and around the country.
Around the world.
Around the world. And you'll be giving lectures on it and the book and all that, yeah?
Yes.
Sounds fantastic.
Hopefully I'll
exciting.
Be talking to you about
well done,
it.
I hope so. Very much hope so, yeah. Anyway, so So I also decided to bring everything together. So I didn't realise that, you know, I'm a Sky customer, I've been right from the start. I didn't realise that instead of having to ring up Netflix and do it separately with them, Sky can do all that and bundle it all together. Spotify. So I can get any music I want now. You know, for years I've been fiddling around with CDs, putting them in an old-fashioned CD player that's got a lift top. You know,
I still have one of these.
Yeah, exactly. On the top lift, you put it down.
I still have vinyl.
Yeah, that's right. And then you sit in your armchair with a glass of red wine and you just press buttons on the hand control.
But isn't that part of it? That's part of the enjoyment for me.
I think it is. Whereas now, I can literally put on any record in the world, some that I'd forgotten about for 20 years. You know, one of my favourite records ever is Something in the Air, Thunderclap Newman. You know what I mean? Great record, yeah. And I don't have that on a piece of DVD anywhere because it was the only record they ever made, really, wasn't it? You know what I mean? But now, bang, Thunderclap Newman, no problem at all. I love it. And those odd records from the 60s, 70s, one-hit wonders. I didn't even know who made How Long Has This Been Going On.
Oh, Paul Carrick.
How long?
Yeah. I went to see him just before Christmas.
Oh, really?
At the Royal College of Music. It was a wonderful gig.
Is that his signature tune,
How Long? It's one of them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There was one song.
The Living Years that he did with Mike and the Mechanics.
Oh, was that it? Yeah, that's him as well.
That's the defining one for me.
There was one song, I can't remember which one it is, and it might have been that Thunderclap Newman one, where everybody who was associated with it has died since, almost like Tutankhamun's curse. I think it was.
Oh, there are a lot of records like that.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but when I was a kid and I first got into music,
yes,
part of the experience and the thrill for me was getting that LP cover in my hand.
Oh, absolutely.
And turning it out and reading the insert.
Absolutely.
I would memorize everything from the studio it was recorded in to the guy who drove the cars to the guy who made the tea.
Sure.
I knew absolutely everything about that band, those artists, and that team of people that made this happen. And that's where I really came in. Nowadays, you listen to something on Spotify, you're not getting that.
No, you're not getting that. I agree. But the world has changed. But I remember, like you, walking to school with a copy of Abbey Road in your hand. Made you feel like you'd won a gold medal.
In a carrier bag.
Yeah, that's right.
With your name on.
Yes, that's right.
And those plastic covers that we used to put on the LPs
as well, to preserve them and all that. I threw all mine away when I went to America once.
No, I still got all
mine. In a fit of pique, I didn't want to go back to America, you know, and old Nick Lloyd said, oh, you know, your time.
Sir Nick,
I like that, yeah. Because I'd been the news editor for 6 years and they said, you're burnt out and all that kind of bollocks, you know. So I had to clear the house out. I decided to rent out the house I was living in at the time because I was going to be away for like 12, 18 months. In fact, I wasn't. I came back and got a job as executive editor at The Sun. That didn't last too long either. But anyway, point of the story is, I was so, you know, fed up with everything, I threw them out. I can remember to this day.
Do you regret that now?
I regret it terribly. Cause I come round
and share mine.
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe that's an invitation I can't refuse. But anyway, point of my story is, I've now got three television units because they're all on separate boxes. So I can be watching. This is perfect for me of a morning. I can have Piers Morgan on in the kitchen, right, which is mostly what I watch. Love Piers, Monday to Wednesday. I can have the BBC on in the lounge as I'm passing through. And in the bedroom,
Sky telly in the toilet.
I can have Sky in the bedroom. And the only thing I can't stomach with Sky these days is, I don't know where their news judgment's gone. Because the other night, you know, I thought, I'll give Sky a try at 6 o'clock. And there were other stories going on in the world, mostly HRH, you know, and very important story. Sky went for 13 minutes live from America on the impeachment hearing of Donald Trump. And it was the most boring load of rubbish.
Yeah, I know. They do this. I remember when the Oscar Pistorius trial was going on.
Yes, that's right.
And Alex Crawford, who I rate tremendously.
Yeah, yeah.
I think she's an amazing journalist.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't fault her at all. I could watch her forever talking about anything. But it became an obsession with them.
Mm.
And I thought, actually, stand back from this for a minute.
Yeah.
Who really cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, we care whether he killed his girlfriend or not. But it's a news item. It should not be the lead story.
Yes. No, I totally agree with all of that indeed. Now, do you go to the cinema much?
Not much, but now and again. I'm choosy.
It says here from one of my journals, scientists at University College London say that a trip to the cinema is as good for your health as a walk or a light jogging session. They also said it could provide a boost for your heart and benefit memory and concentration.
Well, it depends how far it is away and how long you've got to walk
it's
there.
No, it's not that. It's
so how can sitting on your bum be good for that?
The research followed 51 cinema goers watching the live-action version of Aladdin, OK? And compared them with a control group reading a novel. Sensors tracked the heart rate, body temperature and the reaction of the skin. Heart rates increased into the healthy heart zone between 40 and 80% of the time. Now, what this means is that your heart gets exercised when you are jogging or when you're walking briskly. But what they're saying is that the adrenaline in your body reacts in a similar way to affecting your heart. You see what I mean? And that's just as good for exercising your internal nervous system.
It's not doing a lot for your circulation, is it?
Well, I don't know.
I spend a lot of time sitting down because I write, and I write minimum 8 hours a day at the moment because I'm working on a book. My doctor has said to me that every 20 minutes I have to get up and walk around because otherwise I will get stasis, which is when you sit for too long and your circulation packs up.
Yeah.
You can end up losing limbs and that kind of thing.
Yes.
So I've got several sets of stairs in my house.
Right.
And I must admit, I don't do it every 20 minutes, but at least every hour,
I'll
go downstairs, make some tea, walk up the top, put some laundry in, do all that. You've got to keep moving. Yep. So I can't see that sitting in a seat in a cinema, okay, it might do some good for your heart if something thrilling goes on the screen.
Yes.
But otherwise, you've got to walk around.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I used to love the cinema.
Saturday morning pictures.
Well, not that as a kid, but, you know, living down on the coast there, if I could get there midweek, say Wednesday and Thursday, because for a long time I was doing weekend shows, you know, and Mondays and Fridays and all that. And the cinemas were empty Wednesday and Thursday. And I remember going to see The Wolf of Wall Street, OK? It's one of my favourite ever films. I think it's fantastic. DiCaprio's brilliant, you know, as the sleazy Wall Street trader who's building a Ponzi scheme, making billions and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I had virtually the whole cinema to myself. And, of course, I booked a gold seat. So it's not like a cinema seat of old. It's an armchair. Not only were you able to take wine in, somebody came in and asked if you wanted a refill. Hey, what?
You weren't going to take it back out.
No. But what I'm saying is you didn't even have to get up and go and get another one. Somebody would come in about every 20 minutes. Would you like another large glass of Pinot, please?
Are you a popcorn muncher?
No, but this is where I really loved it. I've had a sweet tooth all my life, right? And my greatest indulgence was getting a bucket of every sweet you can think of. So
what, pick and mix stuff?
Oh, my God.
So imagine all those people with pissy fingers who've gone in those...
There's something really gross about pick and mix. I would scrabble around to the bottom with my little shovel, you know, and then put
into my scoop and
put them in. So licorice all sorts, right? Raisins covered in chocolate.
Shrimps. I love those pink
and
shrimps.
And bananas.
Love those.
Pink shrimps.
Don't like the bananas.
Yellow bananas. Love them.
Fudge. And bits of fudge. Yeah. Love those.
These long stringy things, you know, that you can munch forever.
And the white chocolate things with hundreds and thousands of them. Like chocolate buttons.
Yes.
Love
all of that.
Those. Milk bottles.
Milk bottles. Yeah, absolutely. Loved it all, you know. And I would eat them all.
I'm getting fillings at the thought of it.
Yeah, yes, so am I, yeah. But the problem is now with the old diabetes too, I can do that once a year at Christmas, you know, have a Hugh Quality streak and all that. But then you've got to wait like 3 months before you assail your body with so much sugar again, which is a hell of a shame. Now, I tell you what I want to talk to you about, Leslie Ann, as a mother of three, have you ever thought that either of your three children was particularly bright and super intelligent and what that might have done for them? And I'll tell you why I'm asking, actually.
Okay.
It's a leading question. I saw an item on the news about 3 nights ago, a local programme, parents boasting that their three-year-old was super bright and she's already been approached by Mensa to join
Mensa. Is she going to be approached if she's 3 years old, unless they've put it out there?
Exactly, and that she's one of the, you know, she can actually, you know, she's starting to play the violin and all this nonsense, Now, I know from experience any kid who's recognises a genius that young is going to have a horrible life.
They're going to be screwed up. completely. And it's almost always to do with a pushy mother.
Of course.
You
very
rarely, well, you rarely hear the phrase pushy father, although...
Well, do you remember that woman, the little girl at Cambridge?
Venus and Serena as well, I'm going to say.
Venus and Serena, but that worked out successfully for them. They came out on top.
But they do resent their father now for having forced them to practice so much.
Weren't the Jacksons the same?
Michael Jackson's dad, I was just going to say. Yep. Joe Jackson, yep. Who yep. used to thrash them with a belt.
Yes.
If they didn't rehearse every night.
They didn't
night.
Rehearse enough, yeah. This particular one, right, and do you remember the one a few years ago? It was a little girl, 14, went to Cambridge as a genius. Her father went and lived with her.
That's
they
right.
used to cycle round on a tandem bike. He used to make her wear her mortarboard. I mean, it was horrendous. And I haven't heard about her for probably 20 years because she's probably reacted so violently against it. She's gone off and lives in a cottage somewhere in the country because her father pushed her so horribly.
It happens,
you know.
So often with yeah, prodigious but, talent. But and it's almost always the parent exploiting it.
Whenever
yeah.
I hear the word Mensa, mm-hmm. I just groan. Mm-hmm. I've met these Mensa wankers, right? And I'm not saying everybody in Mensa is a tosser, right?
You but, just did.
But, well, okay, I don't know. No, I mean... I've met wankers who happen to be in Mensa, okay? But I'm not branding every Mensa member a tosser, okay? I want to clear
just
that up,
just to
please.
Make that clear, yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
Clear. But I interviewed once when I was a reporter in London for the Birmingham Mail. They suddenly happened on the fact that the new head of Mensa was from Birmingham, but he lived and worked in London, you know. So I had to go and see him. And the guy was a complete fraud, a complete flake. You know, he talked utter nonsense, which, you know, I could have unravelled in minutes, but the interview would have collapsed because I'd have called him a complete dickhead, you know what I mean? But he used to say, you know, he had these stock expressions. He said, what do you think we call a Mensa convention? Oh, I said, I don't know, what do you call it? He said, it's where the eggheads get laid.
Ha, ha, ha.
And all this kind of stuff, you know.
And
you saw yourself. A mate of mine, years ago, he had a girlfriend who was in Mensa. And, I mean, she wasn't super bright. She was just super affectationally inclined. You know what I mean? Talking bollocks, talking nonsense.
Using words of four syllables when one
exactly.
would do.
Earth mother, you know, going on about the, you know, the nutrients in food that nobody else had spotted. It's all bollocks. So anyway, if you're in Mensa and you're a normal, good Mensa person, then please take it all back. Please ignore my insults. Take it all back. Otherwise, if you're a Mensa tosser, get real.
You know what? One... For each of my children, yep. I did do this, and Sue's corner, here we come, right?
Yep.
So with each of them, yep. I would play immense amounts of music
right.
while they were in utero,
wow.
so before they were
yeah.
born.
Yeah.
I'd read a book called The Secret Life of the Unborn Child.
Oh, yes.
Amazing, fascinating book. It
yep.
talked about, going right back to classical times,
right.
that children exposed to music
yes.
in the womb
yes.
would have an affinity for music when they came out
yes.
and that they also become musicians.
Yes.
Now, it worked with all three of my children.
Wow.
I can't play anything.
No.
I can't sing. I'm
yeah.
not musical. I
yeah.
love music.
That's brilliant.
But I can't do any of it. My three kids
yeah.
each play three instruments and can sing, perform, everything else. So I do think, as yeah. an experiment, that
something
was successful.
Okay.
Just speaking from my personal point of view.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad about that. Okay, Leslie-Ann, well, thank you once again for joining me in the studio today. Kind of a vast range of subjects again. Got to the bottom of some of life's mysteries. Remind people, please, where they can get hold of you, Leslie-Ann.
On Twitter, at LAJWriter.
Yes, that's right. And I'm at Mike Parry 8. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Again, please let us know what you think of these podcasts. We do them for you, with you, and on behalf of you, for the people, with the people, of the people. And we'll be back with you again very soon on Planet Porky. He has regular facelifts. He gets that thing where they peel off the top of his layer of his skin and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff. He is regularly... having all sorts of work done on his body to keep him fit because he still likes trying to seduce young girls in their 20s, you know
what
I mean?
Can he still get it up?
I don't know, I haven't asked him.
Ask him.
Well, no. And he is terrified,
no.
He's told me this, he's terrified of, you know, his modus operandi is, you know, if he's down in London working, he'll do a job and then he'll arrange to stay overnight. And then if he's... you know, got an eye on one of the young production staff, female, right, he'll invite her around to his hotel the following morning after the show, you know what I mean? To say, oh, there was something, a project I wanted to discuss with you and all that kind of stuff, you know?
How sleazy.
Yeah. Whenever I hear the word Mensa, I just groan. Mm-hmm. I've met these Mensa wankers, right? And I'm not saying everybody in Mensa is a tosser, right?
You just did.
But, well, okay, no, I mean, I've met wankers who happen to be in Mensa, okay? But I'm not branding every Mensa member a tosser, okay? I want to clear
just
that up,
just to
please.
Make that clear,
yeah,
ladies
make it
and gentlemen.
Clear.
Do you regret that now?
Regret it terribly. I
come round and share mine.
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe that's an invitation I can't refuse.